and Sally Friedman for Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, February 17, 1977, interviewing Judge Marion Finkelhor. Background and the present situation of the person we're interviewing. And from our information and the various different people in the community that have contributed to it, they're going to have to see what would formulate another book. The early one was The Immigrant Experience. Yeah. This one could just be men and women of Jewish community in Pittsburgh. It could be the women of the Jewish community in Pittsburgh. It will depend really on what we find we have on the tapes. But they will be preserved and will probably be. If I may, I just wanted to make sure that I'm getting your voice.
This project has gotten me into the same time to meet and want to do the same thing. I told my parents next time I'm coming down with the tape recorder, I'm going to get your oral history.
Because it's
fascinating. Well, let's just begin then with you, because we know that you have other commitments, and we have this first hour with you. In fact, in reference to what you were just talking about, the first thing that appealed to me to ask you, in kind of looking over a brief review of your past that was given to me, is what obstacles did you have to overcome or endure in 1941 in order to get a law degree?
Really, not so many. I think that I have to put myself in perspective.
Fine.
All right. Between my age, my parents were, so that you can understand the answers to these.
Right.
I was born in 1918, so that makes me now 58. So that I belong to the generation that was growing up in the 30s.
the woman of her age, too. She had one. Both my parents were born in Denver. She had wanted to go to medical school herself. And mother, she died, was 80. So she was born in 1955. But I don't know what influenced her. It's just kind of thinking. It also might have been that there were no boys in the family, so that maybe some of this and achievement, I had gone as brothers if there had been, but both my sister and I were, it was expected of us that we could be high achievers. And one of the things, I think in part, I carried that with me up to the day that they passed away, that I would think people would just be pleased when I got sworn in as a judge. Things have happened since, and I thought, gee, this is something that mother and dad would have enjoyed. It didn't mean so much to me that it would have been the kind of thing that would have satisfied them. So that there was this emphasis on education and achievement. Two, I graduated college during the Depression and the availability of jobs were very small. I made the decision that summer that I had a liberal education as a student that I would go to law school. Now, I don't think that I, outside of the fact that there were three women in the law school at the time that had to take a certain amount of usual joking around, etc., I never thought that I really had tremendous obstacles. I graduated, I found a job. I think my job opportunities were limited. They were limited both in two ways. At that time, in 1941, the large law firms in the city still were not hiring Jewish lawyers, like Reed Smith and Armstrong. I mean, it'd be great. They would, if the top person in the graduating class were non-Jewish, he would be offered jobs in a wide variety of jobs. If the person was Jewish, they would not get themselves. So that any.
Okay, well, the main thing that you said was the self-concept you had, that you never had to question the fact that as a woman you could go to law school and achieve what you did because your parents had presented you with that kind of self-image or sense of self.
I suspect that was it.
And it was unusual.
I didn't feel that limited anymore. Now, there's another factor, and you know, you're really getting into history, but there was a women's movement that was going on in the 30s. You know, that was the period that the first woman judge came on this court, Sarah Sokol. And Anne Alfred came on the court in, I guess it was around 41, 42. And Lois Mary McBride came on, and there were three women judges that were appointed and then subsequently elected. And then there was no one who came on the court until I came on in the mid-70s. It was sort of like the women's movement, you know, sort of came to a halt with World War II and then the period of the 50s. But there was a certain emergence, not the way the women's movement is viewed now, in which you know, there's an attempt to move all women. It was that individual women. It was a very individualized kind of thing, that various individuals were sort of pushing ahead.
What did your mother do in the home? Did she help your father with his office, or did
he was a physician? Mm-hmm. Mother,
what was your maiden name, by the way?
Hank. Mother, I think, and I think this is what was basically not a very happy person. In that. She was not interested in club work. I think she felt that that she never really had a place to put her intellectual energies.
So she had one in medicine.
That's right. Now, whether she would have gone through, but at that time was really unheard of in her particular family. And she spent a lot of time. You know, I spent a lot of time with my mother in terms of work that I was going to school. There's this constant emphasis on intellectual achievement. My sister felt that they both discussed this. This was the way you can do this. She spent a lot of time discussing what we were doing. But she kind of didn't ever develop, and I know as we got older, we felt maybe she could find certain satisfactions in volunteer work.
So even when you were older and in college and kind of on your own, then?
Well, when I became quite independent of my family, and I don't know why that happened either. I graduated law school, and I went to live in Washington. I was living at home, and even when I was in law school, I kept finding jobs over the summer. No, I really moved into I became, did everything of becoming a lawyer or a doctor. I was also interested, I think in a way, more interested in the social problems of the period. Now, they were not interested.
What were some of these social problems?
Well,
in Pittsburgh and generally.
Very one is the rest of the prison. And I had spent 2 summers working in a model, I used to call them reformatories, but actually now you call them training schools for in Reisterstown, Maryland. Model one, I think it was the 30s in which they had psychiatric, psychological backups. And I worked with a group of girls there. I worked with the steel workers one summer. They weren't the steel workers yet, they were the steel workers organizing. Beginning of the CIO movement. And, when the CIO movement first started, it was a committee of the AFL. It still wasn't really very organized. You know, all you had were the craft unions and still. And after the union, the steel workers organizing committee began to recruit members and so forth, they set up a training program. Shop stewards, and how you handle complaints, and how you bargain, and how you picket, and that sort of thing. And I worked for them for one summer, actually the summer before I went to law school, in setting up some of the details of the training program. And they still have this training program. It's at Penn State, but at that time it was an old WPA camp in Mount Davis, Pennsylvania. That certainly didn't interest my parents.
Were you advising them in terms of law? Is that the
problem? No, I had to. Well, no, it was setting up a.
Okay, you were.
I was the low man on the totem pole. I was.
This is prior to law school.
Yeah, it was the summer before I say law school. At that point, Carol Rutenberg,
she's not Pittsburgh. I'm not
a
either,
staff
but.
Person on the steel workers organizing committee, and the person who was kind of associate and gold who was the head of the committee.
Yes? Just trying to get the perspective in time.
But I was really doing kind of administrative things, you know, getting people there to talk to them, getting a program worked out. It was always a problem of people coming in. I was kind of like an administrative assistant, but it was a fascinating summer because this was the first experience that people have had with collective bargaining, some of the men at the plant level. And many of them subsequently became very important to the workers in the union. Many of them became important subsequently in government. And this is kind of the beginning. No, my role was very small, but you wanted to know how close I stayed with my family. And what I was trying to tell you is that I began to get involved in projects in which they really didn't know anything about this. In fact, they felt they were quite radical, and they were very concerned that I was off the deep end somewhere.
And what about your sister?
What did she do? Well, my sister is 7 years younger than I am, and that.
Come in, Mr. Hicks.
She's 7 years younger. She's been extremely active in community affairs.
Her name?
Sonley Lau. She was head of the Women's Division of Federation for a time. And she elected to volunteer. have standards in many.
Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
That's fine.
Did I get a mail thing?
Yes, I do. I have them. You're doing fine. It'd be easier for me to eat than you, though.
So it seems that your sister elected to do something quite different from you. Was she is she as independent a person as you were from the family, or did she stay closer to the family?
She stayed closer.
So you were the maverick, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really... Okay.
Yeah. No, she stayed closer. I suspect part of this. She was the youngest.
Did you have grandparents living when you were growing up?
That's interesting. Were they much of an influence?
Were they born here in Pittsburgh?
No. My parents were born in Pittsburgh, but my grandparents were born in Poland, Lithuania, you know, that
staffel that you couldn't find.
Well, it was, we always considered ourselves to be Litvaks, you know, I mean, that was, you know, there was that hierarchy that, and that, it's a hierarchy of people, you know, took certain pride in their place of origin as opposed to
absolutely
somebody else's. Now, when I married my husband, one of the things that we loved so that
what year was this?
42. To get everybody together, but when I married Howard, one of the things that my grandmother and other members of the family pointed out is that his family had come from Steinerstedt or Nottingham, somebody knew who they were back in Europe, which gave him a
acceptable
which is kind of interesting about how long that feeling lasted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because when other grandchildren got married, their place of origin of the person was different. You know, negative comments were made. There was a. I think the original immigrants had very strong feelings about. And I suspect wherever you came from, you felt that was the best. Best area.
It's the same thing that's still occurring in Israel today.
Oh, really?
Tremendously. No. Whether you're Russian or Polish or German or whatever, there's a definite hierarchy. I don't know exactly which is considered the top and which the lower, but...
But it exists.
It definitely exists. Mm-hmm. And now it's coming in terms of what kind of a sovereign you are. So,
well, when I was growing up, and I think this is kind of interesting, there was still a distinction in the community between German Jews and Eastern European Jews, which I think has been pretty well gone. Make that distinction anyway. But I remember when I went to Temple, the social groups that were formed. Mm-hmm.
Which Temple, by the way?
Rav Shalom. In fact, we had the biggest confirmation class there prior to the World War II baby boom. We had 125 people that were confirmed in my class, much larger than it is now.
It is large.
And that was a socially acceptable thing to do at that point. At that point, people belonged to two synagogues. And those who were, conservative, maintain their conservative commitments that they sent their children to.
So good.
Do I go off the tape when I...
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that the volume was all the way up so we would get you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
But they sent their children to Rav Shalom. And there were hierarchies there. I mean, there were club groups. Mm-hmm. That was the period of the club and the fraternity. And, Greek letter clubs. And you know, one of the rest of the little side, my husband was 7 years older than I. He had a club. But in his day, they weren't Greek letter clubs. Now, when it got to my group, clubs had, they were modeled, the high school clubs were modeled on the college sororities and fraternities, so they had three clubs. And there were three of them, I remember, in my particular confirmation class. And they were in part, there was one that primarily had Jewish families, and there was one that non-German Jewish, and then there was one that kind of had very little status, and I don't quite know whether, I can't remember now exactly whether it's an economic difference between two and three, or that there was a real status in this particular group. Part of it was economic, but a large part was still the origin.
Please have some lunch. Now,
just follow this paper for sure. It'd
be interesting if you could continue on this point about the social situation and
social life revolved really around one's confirmation class more than. I spent a lot of time at Temple, and Temple had other activities besides just the religious school. I had dancing classes there. They had basketball. Some of this, I noticed just recently, is being revived, but it was a focal point in the social life of the adolescent. And my friendship group was based upon those people who were confirmed with me, not necessarily those people who went to school with me. No, for my own children, this is long since to be. And there were many social events in that pre-con and con year, which is 15 and 16, where you know, getting patterns are first set up. Else who's about my age that kind of, because that was all gone by the time my children grew up. I mean, I wasn't careful because their friendship group certainly didn't stem out of they went to religious school, kind of peripheral, you know, part of their friendship.
Did they, and your children probably went to the religion that the house of worship of their friends? And that was acceptable as a social kind of outlet? Did that happen? Or did, in other words, they didn't just spend time with the children within the temple or within their own background.
Yeah.
They
well,
spread out into...
Their friendship groups were really based on people that went to school.
The temple being the social.
Yeah. And their,
They might follow their friends into their
and
social
they
and religious.
And you say that they go to their house of worship. We happen to live in a neighborhood, one of the few neighborhoods in Squirrel Hill that at least the time my children growing up were quite neighbors, and with a very strong Catholic component. And certainly they went along, and Sally went with her best friend to communion or fashion where she'd walk and wait for Sally's night, oldest daughter.
Getting to your children in a little bit.
Excellent choice of names. Although I'm a Sarah originally.
She is Sarah.
No, I'm a Sarah.
She is Sarah, and she did something very interesting, and that is when we say, were you called Sarah growing up?
No.
Well, we called her Sally, but when she got to college, she shifted her name to Sarah. We're the only people left that call her Sally.
That's interesting.
Well, she grew up in at home, but she found that she wanted to be Sarah. She liked the sound of Sarah, you know, and also I think she enjoyed having a biblical name, which is a little bit what I know about people
like that. Absolutely.
It was an old-fashioned name. It was a grandmother's name.
So. Not too popular now.
But you would not have gone to your friends' houses of worship when you were growing up. That was that acceptable, as acceptable then? Would you
like
attend social functions?
Most of your social friends came from temple, so therefore most of your friends were also Jewish.
I also hid